We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 271 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton. I've been off for about a week now. Took a nice vacation, but with me again today is Emil Evanesian. How's it going today, Emil?
Good, Dan. How are you doing? How was the vacation? How was the break?
It was okay, but you know, us content creators, when we're supposed to be relaxed, we're supposed to be doing other things, we're constantly trying to think of what we can do when we get back. And so now I'm back, and I thought a good way to ease myself back in was a podcast that I've done 270 times before. So let's start with an easy topic, too. I don't want to jump right into the post-vacation, you know, we'll say the melee of all the different news we have. So we're going to start with the away jersey reveal. And before we talk about what it was about and the complications of it, what did you think of it, just visually?
So, like, in a vacuum, I actually kind of like it. I mean, just the color scheme, like the super, like that really gentle, like super light, the purple with, you know, or violet, or however we want to call it.
Lavender, lavender, periwinkle.
Yeah. I don't hate it. I mean, in a vacuum, I think it looks fine. It's just as a Barca jersey, I think it looks weird. You know, like it just, and I know the away kits aren't Blaugrana. Like they've gone with all manner of different colors before, but this one just sort of felt just a little bit odd. Yeah, like I don't think it's terrible looking. I mean, I like it more than I like the home kit, but it looks strange as a Barca jersey. Or I think the one thing that I like really dislike about it, and I know this kind of goes into the motivation for the shirt, is that the crest doesn't have the blue and red. It doesn't have the Blaugrana. It's not the classic colored crest. And so just the whole thing felt a little bit almost disorienting in terms of its color scheme. But it's like a weird thing. I was actually showing it to my wife, and she was looking at it, and you know, she was like, as a Barca kid, she called it uninspiring, but I could see if any number of other clubs had that as their away kit, I could see myself looking at it and thinking, you know, hey, that's not bad. That could actually be kind of sharp, but it's a little bit strange as a Barca kit. How about you?
I do like it. I wouldn't say I really like it, but I mean, hot take. I think the away kits over the last 10 years have been better than the home kits. Year in and year out. I think with the home kits, you kind of get surprises, and not all those are good. And with the away kits, I think many of those have been pretty inspired, but if anything, they've been a little more simple. And I think that's what fans have been calling out for a long time now. I thought this past year's home jerseys were simple. I liked those. But I mean, of the last 10 years, even, I think I've really liked the away jersey 7 of 10 times more than I've liked the home jersey. Just because, you know, I wasn't a big fan of the Croatian squares. I wasn't a big fan of the horizontal hoops.
I hated those.
Right. Yeah. And so you're kind of left with looking
at loved the one in between those where it was, it wasn't so much the burgundy stripes, but it was the thick red and blue vertical stripes. I really liked that one a lot. And I think it might have been the same year or a different year where I loved the away kit where it was the deep burgundy with the like the neon orange, like that one really kind of spoke to me. I actually really dug that one a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of a hard stance. Get neon out of my club. That's as much as everyone argues about Bartomeu out or Coleman out, or as much as you could say out, I always say get neon out.
No neon.
That's the only hard stance I take. But all right, anyway, more importantly, I think about this away jersey. We do want to mention, too, it is in honor of the Selecció Ciutat Barcelona, which was a group of women we saw in the reveal that played against Unió Esportiva Centelles on Christmas Day 1970 at the Camp Nou in front of 60,000 people. They were coached by Antoni Ramallets, the old Barça goalkeeping legend. Though because they were not part of the club, they did not wear the colors or use the name. So I do want to just speak here about how media and how these big clubs and organizations have to present their news and present their information. So it's definitely an important thing, and not even important, but I think it's a good message that both for the women and the men, that this is supposed to be really a women's kit, that this is in honor of the women that paved the way for the team that has become a professional team just in 2015 and now has won the treble in the Champions League. So to have the men wear a jersey because of the women, I think is a really important step for the club to take. I think it's a good look. It's not, I mean, the color light purple is not for men or women, it's for all people. And I think, again, it looks really sharp, I think, whether I was wearing it or my wife was wearing it. That said, I think the important thing too is the fact that Barcelona does have an opportunity, and I hope they continue to do this. I'll be on their Twitch stream parroting and yakking off all year, so you can hear me talking about the fact that you can't, even though the history was not what it should have been, I mean, denying those women the opportunity for professionalism and not putting the financial backing that they deserved in 1970 and waiting all the way until last decade to do that. And it's not just Barcelona. It was all of football associations all around the world. So it's not just Barcelona. But I mean, the one thing I would say is that I hope that Barcelona continues to own their history and say, hey, we kind of messed up here. We didn't give women the chance they needed when they deserved, when we could have. And in the last 10 years, we have. And we've been a leader in that category. And I think, again, the treble, the financial investments, and now this away jersey are all steps for Barcelona to be the leaders in women's football. And that is something I'm proud of. That's Mesque un Club to me. And that says that Barcelona are on those values. So I'll let you respond to that. And then real quickly, I want to do the some of the updates to the Barça Femení this year, because they have made some changes too.
Yes. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, I think I understand, like, it's idealistically, you know, and because I feel the same way that, you know, these women played sort of under the Barça umbrella, but were not allowed to wear the colors or use the name, which is, it was 50 years ago. So I don't know what we can surmise what the world was like, but that stinks, you know, that they couldn't just wear the crest, wear the colors, and actually just be FC Barcelona Femení, or, you know, whatever they would have been called at the time. The ideals of the club are sort of the historical ideals, and sort of, I think, a lot of what, aside from all the sort of the financial heavy lifting, I think a lot of what the sort of the bringing back Joan Laporta and what he's kind of been espousing and what he kind of ran on and what he, I guess, will ultimately be judged on in this tenure is the ability to kind of reinstill those principles and those kind of core pillars of what the Mesquite Club and, you know, what the Barcelona philosophy is thought to be. And it was based on sort of the international club. Because here, like, when you speak to Espanol fans, they will say, like, Espanol was the club of the Spaniards at the time. And Barcelona was, they were bringing in foreigners from all over the world, all over Europe and everything. It was a message of kind of, you know, we're not so much the outsiders, but we're the club of everybody. We're from all over the world, and we have diverse backgrounds. And I think inclusiveness and promoting and just really supporting, not just lip service, but kind of meaningfully supporting the women's clubs. And, you know, I think that goes hand in hand with that. And that needs to be a part of it. Yeah. And so I do think that this thing happened 50 years ago, and, you know, it's cool that it happened 50 years ago, but I think it is really cool that they are putting it so front and center, that they are kind of calling that into question. Because the good thing about that is, as the story of these kits is, even if there's a small blog post or just kind of small asides about what the kit is about, people will Google that, you know, and people will sort of some people will take a curiosity and they'll learn what this was and kind of what this is all grounded in. And I think that's fantastic. And so it's a step, it's another, it's a brick in a very large wall that needs to be built. In recent years, Barca has shown a real commitment to the women's team. And, I think all of this is kind of just to show that, and not just we're going to pour money into, the women's team, or we're going to promote the women's team, but we're going to promote women playing football throughout history. We're going to shout it out. We're going to celebrate when it's happened in the past. And ideally, we're going to support it and set a stage for it to continue and to grow and thrive going forward. So in that sense, the inspiration behind the kit, I think, is fantastic. So in that sense, kind of we talk about the aesthetics. I think like where it's coming from is a very good place. And again, like you said, it's a springboard. This isn't any kind of mission accomplished, but it's yet another thing that you can do to support the growth of this game among four women and their opportunities to succeed within it.
Yeah, we just went 10 minutes on this, and the truth is, for fans who listen to this, they don't really care too much about the Femini yet. They will just see a purple jersey, and you're right, that's it. They won't think twice about it, and that's okay too if those aren't ready yet for embracing the women's status. But again, Barcelona giving those opportunities to learn. And so before we move on to talking about the men's first team in the preseason, I want to mention some of the updates to the Femini. The Vicky Lozada and Kerry Hamraoui, they are out. They've gone to Man City and PSG respectively. The big one is Luis Cortes, the manager. I've been building up to this. He's been out now for a few weeks, and Jonathan Giraldez is now in charge. He was an assistant, and now he's the head man. But as you mentioned, international players have come in. Norwegian midfielder Ingrid Engen has come to the club for the first time. The first Swedish player ever is now with the club. Swedish winger Fridolina Rolfo and Spanish defender coming over from PSG Irene Paredes. That's one that I had teased months ago, because originally there were rumors and musings that she'd be coming from PSG long before those two matched up in the Champions League. So those three joined the club. Rolfo, for a quick one, is a bit more industrious as a winger than Graham Hansen or Martins, who are more go at the wing backs, go at the full backs, and attack, attack, attack. Rolfo is, again, much more industrious, much more defensive. I'm hoping she fits in. I think it'll be a question on how Barcelona want to play and the different wrinkle that she could add than the other two primary wingers. So right now, there are, with a lot of young players fighting for spots too, I think the team still might have about three or four players too many, definitely a few too many forwards. So I won't be surprised if their transfer business is not done yet, and don't be surprised if a big name wants out to be the primary starter elsewhere. That's just the rumblings I've heard. That's what I've seen. So their transfer business is not done, but a team that won the treble has gotten stronger. That is the too long, didn't read there. So let's move now and shift gears to talking about the first team and their preseason match against Gymnastique coming up on Wednesday, so 2 days from now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What do you, just in the big overarching thing, if you're, I'll get into the names, I'll list all the players that are going to be there, Emil, but big picture, what do you want to see from Ronald Koeman against Gymnastique on Wednesday? I mean, because it's preseason, we're going to overthink it, we're going to overanalyze it, and we're going to make it mean more than it does.
Totally. And I look forward to doing that. But the spine of the team, I mean, these aren't kind of meaningful minutes for the veterans. I mean, because the thing is, guys aren't even necessarily getting back into game shape because it feels like they barely just stopped playing. So it's not like guys have had a long off season and they need to sort of get the engine fired back up. I mean, I think more than anything, I want to see a hint of sort of depth. And I think, and in certain areas in particular, kind of in the midfield and, you know, in parts of the attack, but I'd say, you know, largely in the midfield, where over the last, 2, 3, 4 years, kind of Barca wound up with a little bit of a, not so much a hodgepodge, but kind of a log jam and just so many players. And it was, you know, you get guys who are out of favor, or, you know, you get guys who fans in the media are clamoring to see playing more minutes and things like that. I mean, I know this is only going to be one game. It's one friendly and it's one exhibition. The notion is it'd be nice to know. And I think this is also true in attack, because the defense is a whole other kind of situation where we need to figure out what that's even going to look like when the season comes around, kind of who's going to be on board and who's going to be gone. I'm less concerned about sort of the implications for the starting 11 so much as I am kind of, I'd like to get a sense of kind of comfort and calm that there's depth behind, there's just sort of competent, stable depth behind, or at the very least, just kind of the framework of that. Whereas we're not kind of always trying to integrate some, you know, sort of big money signing that may or may not have even fit at any point, but we got him anyway. And so we have to figure out what to do with him. It's funny, I've actually thought about this. There was and no one wants to hear about someone playing video games, but there was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, you know, I got the FIFA game and I was playing the career mode. Mm-hmm. And you'd like, I played with Barca, and, you know, I'm like most people, it's fun to buy people in the transfer market. And I wound up with this weird midfield of like 8 midfield superstars. Like I had like, you know, Thiago and Pogba and Koke and on top of that, I had Busquets and everything else. And it just kind of feels like that now, except these guys aren't pixelated video game characters. So they are people with agency and emotions who are frustrated and, you know, want to get on with their careers and their lives. And so I think, you know, that's one of the things that's happening is, you know, they're trying to sort that out at the top end with the big money guys, but still, like, there's going to need to be backups and depth and support for whoever winds up being the starting, you know, the top 3-4 midfielders that are the frontline guys. And I want to see a sense of that. I just want to feel a sense of calm that when a guy needs a rest or if someone gets banged up a little bit or something like that, or, you know, yellow cards accumulate, and that there's someone that can step in and just do a job. You know, I mean, if a star emerges, that's fantastic. But right now I'm not even trying to kind of shoot the moon like that. It's just, if there's just sort of good, coherent depth and just sort of fluidity in the play, just kind of a conceptual kind of buy-in and understanding of what the team is trying to do.
Well, I think due to the international break, but the international tournaments this summer, we are seeing a much more B-team heavy preseason squad than we normally do, especially in comparison to the last 2 seasons. So they haven't really released any real lists about who's available in training, but just doing a process of elimination of who's not there, you can kind of figure out who's going to be available for this preseason friendly. So there looks to be Neto, Pique, Umtiti, Dest, Roberto, Pjanic, and Puig from the first team. Again, that's Neto, Pique, Umtiti, Dest, Roberto, Pjanic, and Puig. And then from the B team, it's unfortunately not Kais Ruiz. Came over from PSG. I wanted to see him, but he is out with COVID protocol, which seems to be the same fate for 19-year-old center back Santi Ramos Mingo, who was injured for most of last year with Barca B, unfortunately. But Iñaki Peña, Arnau Tanás, center back Arnau Comas, Alejandro Balde, who it seems to be with his contract renewal underway. So that is good news since last week.
Yep.
Nico Gonzalez, Alex Callado, 16-year-old Gabi, who, for those who've been listening to this podcast and particularly listening to one with Navid, know that we have talked about Gabi before. So to see him with the first team is not crazy. I know he's 16, but that's not insane if you've heard us talk about him before. And the new signing, Yusuf Demir, they're all part of first team training. So by my count, that's 15 total players, three of which are goalkeepers. So there could even be more B-team players on Wednesday, but I'm assuming all of those I mentioned already will feature in some way, shape, or form against Gimnastique. That said, Memphis Depay, as we speak, is finishing up his medical. So I think he will also likely, I mean, he, again, as you said, he played 2-3 weeks ago for the Netherlands. So he will be probably in that match as well, making his Barcelona debut in that preseason friendly. So I think what we will see, this is my starting 11 here, I think we're going to see experience mixed with youth. So Neto in net, I can see Dest at left back to start, Umtiti. Believe it or not, I know the club wants him out, but I could see Umtiti starting instead of Comas because Ramos Mingo, rather, is on the shelf right now. So again, you're only really talking about Arnau Comas. So I think Umtiti will still start even though they're trying to sell him. Maybe use that preseason friendly, send that tape around the world.
It's almost like that's your one shot to kind of play. You just hope you hope he captures some of the old magic and you can just kind of snip that video and just be like, see, he still got it.
Yep. And then next to Umtiti, I think it'll be Pique, as I said. And then Sergio Roberto coming back from injury will play right back most likely. And then the midfield, I think you have Pjanic, Nico Gonzalez playing the pivot, and Ricky Puig, the midfield trio. And then up top, I think it'll be Yusuf Demir and Alex Callado up on the wings. And then probably Memphis Depay starting in the middle. If not, and Memphis is not ready to go, then maybe it's Callado as some kind of false nine with Dest out wide and Baldi as a left back. So whether or not they play a 3-5-2, whether they play a 4-3-3, I expect to see some combination of everything that I just mentioned. But yeah, I think it's time. Let's do the Yusuf Demir thing. He was signed on loan for 1 year with a 10 million euro option to buy. He's an 18-year-old Austrian who came up through the Rapid Vienna youth system, playing 38 times for Vienna's first team since 2019, scoring 9 goals and 4 assists. He's played across the entire front line in his time with Rapid Vienna, but his most comfortable position is at an attacking midfield spot, basically pulling the strings. And, you know, of course, we saw that people were calling him the new Pedri. But actually, Kais Ruiz, coming from PSG, plays a much more similar style and in similar positions to Pedri, where being on the left wing, that being Kais Ruiz, being on the left wing as Pedri was for Las Palmas, but also being at his best in the middle as a left interior. Demir is much more of a guy who's going to play farther even up the field than Pedri was even comfortable at Las Palmas. He is kind of a forward. He is kind of a winger, I mean, he is a number 10. He's really, I mean, if everything I watched of him that I could, and many of it was just highlights. I mean, even his Austrian debut, I tried to watch just 5 minutes against the Faroe Islands, and no disrespect to the Faroe Islands. Actually, a credit to them. They ended the game 3-1, but again, he only got 5-1. So the only real game I've seen him in the entirety of the game was December 2020, a Europa League game against Arsenal, which Arsenal won 4-1. Now, in that game, Demir didn't get too much of the ball, and honestly, I didn't learn much from it, what I saw. I mean, at the time, I think there might have been one whisper about Demir potentially coming to Barcelona as of December, or that might have even been March. But he was 18, so I was watching for a young prospect in that kind of match. That's what I usually do. And he isn't even that tall, basically the same size as Pedri, but very much like Pedri, very much like Puig. He does a really good job of putting his body between the opponent and the ball, and he knows how to draw a foul. So let's start there. But what I did like in that Arsenal match is that he wasn't afraid to dribble into space. He basically, I think at Rapid Vienna, was given a green light that he probably won't get at Barcelona if you ask Trincao or some of those other players. But what I did see too is that though he did get himself in trouble with dribble sometimes, he did make the early decisions with a pass as he was receiving it quite often, where he knew where to play that pass, and it was often the right decision. Whether it was a 15-yard pass straight up the middle, and his forward passing seems to be good, and it seems to be, again, usually the right decision, which is something that you tend not only be able to teach, but it's also a skill that translates well for an 18-year-old. So those are the things that I think are going to work out. The big question that you and I were discussing, though, here before we started recording, is that between, I know Kais Ruiz is in COVID protocol, but he could still do some of the first team training. But again, he's 18 and had played first team football with PSG. So Kais Ruiz, you have Demir, who again is one of the biggest prospects in world football that Barcelona were able to get on loan, potentially for a €10 million buy. And then you have Pedri as an interior, and then you have Ricky Puig. You also have an attacking midfielder from Granada, 20-year-old Antonio Aranda. So you have at minimum three players who could play it, and Gabi as well, who could play for Barca B as an attacking midfielder. And then adding Puig needing time for the first team as well, that's now five attacking midfielders between the ages of 18 and 21 years old, which I think is quite interesting to have four different players that profile at the number 10 spot. And yes, probably only one of them will be not even a consistent starter, because Busquets and De Jong and Pedri are the starters. Nico Gonzalez and potentially Jandro Orellana, if he resigns, which he has not yet done, maybe he will. So that guy is going to be the pivot. But you're not going to replace De Jong or Pedri for 10 years at this instance. That said, the depth of the attacking midfield, I'm interested to see which of those players not only become the regulars and the starters and the heroes for Barca B, but which players, most likely Demir, push into the first team picture first.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of like you, I mean, I haven't seen Demir play kind of, when I say live, I don't mean in person, but even just kind of in real time, or sort of with a great deal of kind of consciousness of who he was. His was a name that I had heard. And then when he became real for Barca, I kind of, you know, as we do, I took to YouTube and kind of tried to glean what I could. And my takeaways were kind of similar to yours in that he is sort of, he's a good distributor. And I think a lot of his sort of the flaws in his game or the mistakes that he makes tend to be more from youth than from kind of some sort of like innate misunderstanding of how to play the position. So I think with that, I mean, he needs reps. He needs time, and just time against the higher competition. And because I do think that, and I mean, you know, we're probably going to wind up talking about this a little bit, but I mean, just kind of once we get an idea of what the squad itself is going to look like for the La Liga season, you know, if they're able to clear out some of the big money in midfield, there's logically just going to be some spaces opening up. And so even if he just spends time with the senior club, almost irrespective of just how many minutes he gets, ideally you'd like to see him get some, but just simply being involved in training at kind of the highest level and with, you know, with guys with the skill level and honestly just the experience and wisdom of, you know, Messi and Busquets and Piqué and, you know, those guys, and just hanging out with De Jong and, you know, hanging out with Pedri, like that's going to help him just kind of in his development and his evolution. And so, I mean, he's one guy that is absolutely fascinating to me. Also, Nico Gonzalez is of great interest. I'm fascinated to see kind of how he plays in the role. I mean, if they, you know, if the lineup is kind of as you laid out, which makes a lot of sense, I'm really interested to see kind of how he slots in there and what his comfort level is sort of just jumping in and playing that role.
Yeah, I'm interested to see him in front of Piqué, because usually he'll drop even deeper in support of Comas and in front of Ramos, Mingo, whoever it may be, with Roger Vieira a lot last year too at the end of the spring. And so I'm interested, to see Nico Gonzalez and playing in front of Piqué most likely, and what that experience behind him does for him as the defensive midfielder. Yeah, so I think of that. I also want to remind people, when it comes to Champions League this year, maybe some in the Liga, but as I always say, that I'd prefer they playing with Barca B than they are sitting on the bench for the Liga, unless the coach does plan on playing them and it's not very conditional. Because I think there were times where, and it kind of not ruined his fall, but Conrad De La Fuente was night and day better in the spring for Barca B than he was when he was fluctuating between the first team and the B team and sitting on the bench in every La Liga match, and then never made his La Liga debut. And he sat on the bench like 16 times last year, only coming in the Champions League. So he did make his first team debut, but it was never in the Liga, that being Conrad De La Fuente. And, you know, these players don't like to just sit. I mean, it doesn't matter what a 17, 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old wants, but we know that development-wise, it's not great for them to be sitting on the first team bench and never featuring. And especially if they're playing in first team training, like Youssef Demir is going to be in first team training, even though he'll be with the B team, he's too good for the Spanish third division. That said, I want to remember, for Champions League, instead of Matheus Fernández, who with the extended bench in the Champions League, Matheus Fernández was on the bench for almost every Champions League match. I want to remind you that he was not injured this year. He was available all the time. And he had his shin pads, he had his cleats, and he was sitting on that bench. That spot now is going to go to a young player. It's almost a guarantee. Even if they bring somebody else in, and even if they can't get Pjanic off the books, that spot is going to go where, instead of knowing that Matheus Fernández isn't going to come into the game, let's say Barcelona really turn something out, you know, turn up the heat, and now they're winning 4-1 or 4-0 in the 85th minute. Now you're talking about debuts that Matheus Fernández just wasn't going to get. He was 22 years old. It wasn't going to make any sense to play him even for 1 minute, other than the one game he played against Dinamo Kiev for, 15 minutes, just to see him, you know, having made this 8 million euro move and to finally just get on the field for good measure. So, yeah, I expect to see a lot of the veterans. But that said, I mean, the list that I mentioned are names that I've been excited to see for not even a while. But, I mean, Gabi is, how do I say this? I don't want to overhype these players. I'm always very careful about overhyping the players. But there is, in this batch, a bunch of players that for a while now we can see have first team potential. So Gabi, he's 16. Don't worry about it. Just let him make his preseason debut. It'll be fun. I'm really excited to see him. I'm really excited to see him playing again next to veterans, playing next to talented players. So Gabi is certainly of the level of the Spanish third division or higher, and he's 16 years old. I'm excited to see him. And in 3 years, I think he has a potential to be a member of the first team, maybe even 2 years. Who knows with him? Maybe even next year. I mean, he could debut this year. He's that good. Then Alejandro Balde, he's the best left back prospect that Barca have had basically since Juan Miranda, and we know his story, and he's still a first-team professional at Real Betis. So Balde is going to be a first-team professional somewhere. He's still just 17, so again, wait on him. That said, he could be the backup for Jordi Alba as soon as this spring if he really progresses quickly, and he could even get spots in the fall if he is able to make his debut. Arnaud Camas had a really good season last year. I'm not sure what his long-term prospects are. Ramos Mingo is the one with a little more potential. But again, Kaiser Ruiz is a guy with a lot of potential. Demir, as I said, is one of, I mean, the preeminent attacking midfield prospects in world football. And then Callado, on the other side of it, 22-year-old who's waited his turn. And it's finally his turn. He's a player that players have been pining to see. And again, Ricky Puig, can he finally, after some discussion from Laporta and Koeman, can he finally become not a guy that plays 10 minutes, but a guy that comes off the bench and plays 35 minutes? That's what you want, right? You're just for Puig, you're arguing for the extra 15 minutes in every match. So can he stake that claim? And as you mentioned, of all this whole bunch, Nico Gonzalez is the one that Koeman seems to be speaking about the most, at least behind closed doors, that is leaked to the media. And so to see him become, we've waited for a long time for the heir apparent to Busquets. And if it truly is Nico Gonzalez, well, obviously I'm excited to watch that. So yeah, I mean, I think this is a group of prospects that of this bunch, you know, Frances has said it many, many times. If one of the 8 or 10 or whatever in a generation make it, then that's a successful generation because of the big money signings that Barca makes. But with their financial problems, if you can get 3 or 4 out of these 7, that I think these are guys that I do have the potential to do that.
And right now you kind of need 3 out of 7, you know, just kind of given the situation. And because that was part of my thought when you listed off kind of the 5 young, between 16 and 21 year old attacking midfielders.
Yeah.
I mean, my thought was, you know, kind of in a vacuum, we look at each of them and they all have the potential to be very good players and very good pros. And in my mind, I was just thinking, let 2 of these guys hit, you know, and let the rest of them just be solid pros, and, you know, maybe you sell them to, you know, whatever happens. They get loaned out, they get sold out. But if you get 2 guys who hit and kind of maximize 80, 90% of their potential, you've really got something. And, you know, it's kind of the same situation. There's a couple of defenders, and, you know, you just need 1 hit. And at least when you can lock down 1 position, at least that's a thing that sort of for 1 January or 1 summer, at least, like, we don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a thing that we have. So we can start trying to address other needs. But I totally agree. And I think that's the thing with Nico Gonzalez too, is like, Sergio Busquets is still Sergio Busquets. Like, he's brilliant. You know, he doesn't move quite as well or quite as much, but, you know, he's still kind of that guy. Like, he's a maestro, and he sees the game and he sort of feels the game in a way that very few people ever have. But there's going to come a point where just, you know, age and time and wear and tear do their dirty work. And, you know, he's not going to be able to suit up for 80, 85 minutes, 60 times a season. And the fact that there is someone that you can at least kind of realistically dream on being a reasonable facsimile of him, and kind of where the, of course, there will be a drop off, but the drop off won't be so stark. And maybe you gain a little bit physically, you know, kind of in energy and stamina, that, you know, where you might lose in kind of innate brilliance and experience and knowledge. And so I'm very excited to see if there is sort of a vision for the future of the Barca midfield and kind of the defensive midfield role there.
I mean, the point of Busquets, I'm interested as well to see how similar this Barcelona team this year, just looking at the way the roster has changed ever so slightly, I think that it would behoove Ronald Koeman to look at what Luis Enrique did for Spain and try to play as similar to that as possible. I mean, you look at how good Pedri was for Spain, how good Busquets, I mean, night and day was Spain when Busquets came out of COVID protocol. So starting with that second game and after the lead up to the Euro, those friendlies, Spain looked not great, not like a favorite. And then the first game against Sweden, they struggled. And all of a sudden, here comes Busquets. And from there on out, every time he was on the field, which is every minute, basically, they were the better team. They were the better side. Even against Italy, they were the better side. And they lose on
penalty. They were an attacking juggernaut when Busquets came in. And just, you know, I mean, in terms of creating chances, I mean, they... Ever the problem, like they needed to deposit some more of them into the goal, but
Barca won't have a number nine.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Barca won't have a number nine either. But if you replace Dani Olmo, and again, no disrespect to Dani Olmo, but if you replace Dani Olmo with Lionel Messi, now you're talking about wins. You're talking about a really dominant side. And yeah, I mean, part of me says that Pedri is. I did this last week or 2 weeks ago about how he can improve and how he can get better. And it's just doing the good things that you see him do and doing those more and doing those consistently over the course of 90 minutes and just being a game breaker 5, 6, 7, 8 times a game instead of just 2 or 3, which is what he does now. Mm-hmm. So it's just being more consistent because of how solid a player he is. And the one wrinkle to the midfield that we have to consider again is as this will be the last segment in the show, Griezmann, Saúl, that deal, it seems to be dead, but then it's also alive, depending on which important journalist you ask. And it seems like everybody has a scoop on this one. I mean, really, all the big dogs on social media seemingly have some kind of connection, because Atletico Madrid and their president, he's known to like to leak things. And then Barca on the other side, you know that they're, even you can change the names and the faces and the presidents, but Barcelona love to leak. It's something that they do.
Yeah.
But that said, it's not all Barcelona too. So there's this Renato Sanchez rumor too, that you know that likely his agent, Jorge Mendes, if you ever heard of him, of course, the super agent, he is using Barca's name, as he always does, to try to up the asking price for his client. But it was apparently a 2-year loan with a commitment to buy, which seems absolutely unlikely based on how Barca and Laporta are currently doing business. And it's interesting, though, because it is sad. The sad part of this for me is not the idea of Renato Sanchez. It's that Ligue 1 winning Lille have been absolutely gutted this offseason with their roster. Just as that Champions League semifinal Monaco team was a few years ago, the last team, by the way, to break up the PSG stranglehold on the title. So to see them gutted in this way, Renato Sanchez likely to be the next one out the door. But Renato Sanchez would be interesting, but again, it tells me nothing. It's like what we did with the Donny van de Beek a few weeks ago. Donny van de Beek, Fabian Ruiz, Adriano Rabiot, Wijnaldum before, you name it. There's a profile that Koeman is asking for, and the club, I think, whether it's through rumors or otherwise, is placating the idea that they are looking for that player, whether or not that player ever comes. Saúl was probably the most likely and the best rumor out there. I mean, I think it really was. I mean, Wijnaldum, of course, it was Barca or PSG, and he chose PSG. So that rumor was real. And then the Saúl deal is the other rumor that is very, very real. That whether it's alive or dead, that's up in the air. That's between the clubs to negotiate. But there is clearly discussions that are actually happening.
Yeah, I mean, I was delighted at the prospect of the Saúl thing. And I mean, some of the stuff that I saw, I think it was it over the weekend or maybe like late last week, before I actually saw some of the details, I saw just some like tweets alluding to it. And there was people who were just kind of saying like, oh my God, Saúl, and they're able to, and just when I thought that it was somehow a done deal. And that's on me because none of these deals are ever so quickly consummated.
I mean, you know the full rumor circuit. Yeah, you know the Barcelona podcast motto here: that until they're holding the jersey, you can't get on board.
It's really true. But I started to get really excited because, I mean, Saul is, I mean, in addition to sort of the accounting side of it, which would be useful, I mean, Saul is the type of player that I think would be fantastic at Barca. And I mean, just personally, I've kind of really enjoyed watching him play. I really like him a lot as a player. So, I mean, I think, yeah, like the Renato Sanchez thing, I didn't really take it too seriously for the problem that, I mean, and I hate to keep bringing it back to this, but, you know, if you want to register Messi, you got to clear the decks. Mm-hmm. And more players, bringing in more players who earn salaries is not the way to do that. Yeah. And so that was part of the thing. I mean, I saw it and I was like, what are we doing here? Unless you actually got something in place, you know, unless you've really kind of got some ducks in a row to offload, you know, whether it's Lenglet or Umtiti or, you know, whomever else, this just doesn't make sense to me. And so, I mean, I think Renato Sanchez is a good player, but I mean, I didn't kind of engage with it as far as, ooh, he might be coming to Barcelona, because it didn't make sense. Like from a logical perspective, I mean, there's other ducks many other ducks that need to go into a row before we can start just kind of adding sort of these other pieces like that.
Yeah, I mean, that said though, with Sanchez, if Barcelona had any money at all, this one would make a lot of sense. I mean, it's an interesting journey he's had though. He'll be 24 next month, breaking onto the scene to 2016 Euros for Portugal when he was still in his first season with the Benfica first team. Then he gets
That he's only 24 still.
Right, because he gets that big move to Bayern Munich, and he sets the world aflame in 2016. Again, that's 5 years ago. Gets that big move to Bayern Munich, does not fit in one season there at all. Yeah. Leaves for Swansea on loan in the...
That's right.
And so then he tries the Bayern thing one other year, and the second year somehow goes even worse than the first one. That doesn't work. And then he's sold to Lille in the summer of 2019 for a bit more than half of what Bayern paid for. And I think, you know, this is me throwing shade at Bayern, but because Bayern is so good at burying their faults and the problems they made or the signing that didn't work out, they're so good at saying, hey, but we made a lot of great signings, so remember when we got Neuer from Schalke? What a great piece of business that was. And, I think Bayern does a really good job PR-wise, especially with the German apparatus behind them, of kind of gaslighting world football that every move they make is Lewandowski and Matt Hummels, and they're all free transfers that work out great. But that doesn't work out, so they sell him for about half of what they paid for to Lille, and then he's really good at Lille when they win the title, and he wasn't even one of their most important players. I don't think he was even top five, one of their best players, but he was an important cog of that machine. And then he was just like for Portugal to Euros, he was an important cog of that machine, even if he wasn't one of their standout players. And so to see him go from this mercurial teenager who it felt like all eyes were always on him to now just being a cog of a system has showed me growth. It showed that he's gone through a lot of failures and iterations. And for me, this is unrelated to Barca. I'm always interested and excited to see a reclamation project like that and to see a player kind of figure out who they need to be as a professional to play. Again, Lille is no giant, but they are Ligue 1 winners. They did win the French league. That is something said there.
They beat PSG, exactly. They had enough to do. And I think he was just kind of miscast early in his career, or, you know, sort of it was, and I don't mean too much too soon for, you know, for him as a person, as much as like, you know, there was just so much put on him in terms of expectation. And just when you're going to Bayern for a big price, there's a level of scrutiny and a spotlight that you've probably never had before. And I mean, he was 17, 18 when he went there, and it was, no, I guess he would have been 19, but I mean, that's a really young age to just try to sort of slide into the Bayern team and just, you know, be a meaningful, not just a meaningful contributor, but sort of at that point, there's almost expectations that you're ascending to stardom, you know, and it's just, so that didn't work out for him. But like you, I'm really glad that he spent those few years in the wilderness. Like he was just kind of bouncing around, but it is really nice to see that his career is kind of found a path.
And yeah, we've heard too,
he's a good player now.
And we've heard too in the past in that Bayern Munich locker room that if you're a young player, they are wolves. They will eat you alive. And if you are not German, they're going to double eat you up. So you have to speak German to defend yourself. And if you don't speak German, you're a 19-year-old Portuguese player. They're going to eat you alive as they did. And so the other one, too, that I was thinking of when you said that is Mikel Merino. He went from being a cast-off. He failed at Dortmund. Not failed, but it didn't work out at Dortmund. It didn't work out at Newcastle. And yet he's only like 25, 26 years old, Mikel Merino, and had the best season of his career with Real Sociedad these last 2 years.
And he's
that's what I mean. So, but and same thing with Saúl. Saúl's now 26 years old, and he had the two worst seasons of his career since he was 20 years old when he came in Atletico Madrid. So these midfielders are not dead. And for all the 18 and 19-year-old attacking midfielders that Barcelona have, if Demir, I mean, let's say Barcelona do spend the 10 million euros because he impresses enough, and then he doesn't do well as a 19 or 20 year old. I want to end this by adding context that once again, Puig is still just even 21 years old, going to be 22. Right. So these players, there is a lot of time when we are completely spoiled and our idea of talent is it's demonstrably, we'll say shot off course when you have Ansu Fati and Pedri at 17 doing what they did and 18 doing what they did. I want to remind you that 21 years old players should be kind of figuring out who they are as a first team player and breaking into teams and finding a role. And then by 23, 24, they're starters and important members of their team. And this is the path that Sanchez took. This is the path that Merino take. This is the path that Saúl was a bit early to that. But now he has to, again, fight again for another spot. And he'll have to go to another club to revitalize his career. But he's still just 26. He's got, what, 6, 7, 8 years at the top level at that position still?
Yeah, at kind of the peak of his physical abilities.
So, again, patience. And when we watch the preseason on Wednesday, I guess that's the through line here. We just need patience. We just get excited about these young players. But also, again, Gabi is 16 years old. So he's going to do something. I promise. This is my only promise. He's going to do something that you're going to go, how is this kid not starting for the first team? He's going to do one thing that's going to make you say that. And then I want to remind you that he's 16. Be patient. Have some patience. And just like it took Iniesta till 21, it took Xavi till 23. Just he'll get there.
Yeah, because I think you and I have talked about this in recent weeks in the past. It's like they're not all Mbappe and they're not all Messi, where kind of at 19, it's this kind of gleaming light that is the sort of the undisputed future of the game. Good players sometimes take, you know, sometimes you need, I mean, and it's really funny because in the context of sort of real life, it's, you know, like, in real life, you're not expected to have everything figured out when you're 22 or 23.
If the person, if my grocer, as I'm at the grocery store, if my cashier is 19 years old, I go, he was really rough with my bananas and my blueberries, and because he's 19 years old.
Don't write him off. He has no future. But here it's like you see like a Messi or an Mbappe, and then you see like kind of a precocious young talent. You're like, oh, well, no, they're not all like that. There's a reason we call these guys like generational once-in-a-lifetime players. Yeah. Sometimes like you're very talented and it takes you until 22 or 23 to really find your stride and your physical maturity and everything else. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that. I mean, I just want to see what's encouraging about these guys and kind of how their decision-making, it's really that. It's kind of process over result at this point. Just kind of how do they approach the game and how do they do it? Like when they get the ball, what is their decision-making process? What is their first move? What is their first kind of inclination? And sort of everything from there, sort of the results will kind of work themselves out if the process is good over time.
Yep. And so we're excited on Wednesday again against Amnastic. And then it's another one on Saturday. And then they've got one against Stuttgart the following week. So there is preseason. It is upon us. Again, we're not going to be too much into it, but still you can be excited for the players that are now playing alongside some of the legends of the game, like PK and as the other, we'll say, quote unquote, legends trickle in. Not quote unquote, Messi's a legend, but the other legends trickle back. Pedri's almost a legend already, I guess. But so as they trickle back in, those first team players and these youngsters get less and less time throughout the the preseason friendlies. Again, still a reminder that there is work to do with the squad. There are still changes to be made. There's still players to go out. I doubt we'll see too many in. Maybe if it is, it's going to be a central midfielder. And we, you know, I think we beat that dead horse to death. So here we go. That's it. I think that'll wrap it up for another edition of the show. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. You can join our closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, answer the questions, and I'll let you into the group. Then on Patreon is how you can financially support the show. That's always very, very, very appreciated. You can also listen to these shows without ads over on Patreon. So a little incentive to support the show. And we're on YouTube, still trying to figure out, for those who are always with us at the end, you know, you get little nuggets of my brainstorming and what I thought about on vacation. So when it comes to the YouTube channel, I've got a few things in the works. I'm not sure if I'm going to do match reviews this year. I'm 50-50 on it, just because it was a lot of time for, you know, let's say not much reward on YouTube and the audience on there. For those who do tune in on YouTube, I appreciate it. But some of the comments there are the ones that are, they're not as nice as this podcasting community and even the Facebook community on a close Facebook group. So I'm going to see what I'm going to do on YouTube this year. It might be more weekly recaps, if you will, instead of actual match reviews. So got to figure out exactly what I'm going to do there. But most importantly, thank you for listening to this, the Barcelona Podcast in your ears. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.